Welcome to the We Know Show. I'm your host, Renate Stralifer, creator of We Are Not Sam. Take a deep dive with me as I chat with global visionaries in conversations that uncover inconvenient truths, but also shine a light on how to be healthy, safe, and human in a technology-obsessed world. Let's get started. Welcome to the We Know Show. I am super excited about my special guest today, Professor Om Gandhi. He's the man that inspired the We Are Not Sam campaign and is an Emeritus Professor of Electrical and Computer Engineering with the University of Utah. And he taught courses on biological effects of antennas, RF, which is radio frequency, and microwave electromagnetic fields for over 50 years. Om Gandhi is a world expert on how mobile phone radiation penetrates the human brain, and he was once a consultant to major mobile phone companies. Om Gandhi now refuses to work with them, and he has authored and co-authored several book chapters and over 200 journal articles in electromagnetic, now you've got to make sure I've got this right, dosimetry, microwave tubes, and solid-state devices. He's also edited a book entitled Biological Effects and Medical Applications of Electromagnetic Energy and co-edited a book entitled Electromagnetic Biointeraction. To say that I'm excited to have him on the show is an understatement. This movement of We Are Not Sam is not based on opinion. It's backed by science and the leading independent scientists from around the world that have a lot to say about this testing method on Sam. So welcome to the show, Professor Om Gandhi.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
First question, you published the paper Exposure Limits, which is the underestimation of absorbed cell phone radiation, especially in children. And this article was published in the Electromagnetic Biology and Medicine back in March 2012. It is, in my opinion, one of the most important papers ever written. And I would love for you to tell us about your research on SAM, the specific anthropomorphic mannequin, which is the dummy that's being used for mobile phone safety testing or wireless radiation. And I'd like for you to explain to our audience why this is not a biological test.
See, the so-called SAM, specific anthropomorphic mannequin is the name, detailed name, is an offshoot of what Motorola was using for internal testing. So when the IEEE decided that they ought to have a official committee to approve how it should be tested, and that committee was dominated completely by industry. So we met at two or three meetings, and they were bringing two or three representatives, each of the industries, to the meeting. I pleaded with them that no more than one vote per industry should be taken. And I opposed the use of SAM because of the spacer that they are using to represent the ear. That's because there was a wrong assumption to begin with that ear is mostly cartilage. But this is a living cartilage. And later on, it was found out that cartilage is not just plastic devoid of blood circulation, but rather cartilage is an absorptive material. And therefore must be represented, the ear must be represented in any measurement of SAR, specific absorption rate, which is called for by the IEEE standard. 1.6 watts per kilogram for any 1 gram of tissue. This is a substantial restriction on the emissions. And if it was observed correctly, then SAM does not represent that by a factor of 2 or 3. And then later on, Canadians got it tested, and they agreed with me that if you put these things in the pocket, for example, okay, forget about how yield should be represented. even in the pocket, the tissue is next to the thin clothing of the pocket, that they, it will violate the absorptive conditions, SAR condition. So then folks in Brazil, Alvaro, and so on, they tested independently and agreed that what I'm saying is correct, that if it is tested correctly by not using a plastic ear, that this will violate the SAR standard by a factor of 2 or 3 or more. And you may have seen my paper where NFR in France got devices tested. Marc Arazi is in France, and he got, he picked several telephones, got them tested, and sure enough, they all violate the SAR standard. Mm-hmm. So all these have been confirmatory ways of testing that the today's cell phones put in the pocket or held against the ear do not observe the safety guidelines, SAR guidelines.
Mm-hmm. And SAR, listening, is specific absorption rate.
Yes, specific absorption rate for any 1 gram of tissue in the shape of a cube. Mm-hmm. And the reason it went into any 1 gram of tissue in the shape of a cube is that at higher and higher frequencies, such as 5G, the most of the deposition is at the surface of the, is in the skin layer, skin. And therefore, 1 gram of tissue will involve a whole lot of area. So that's why the framers of the standard said cube would be good enough. And I was participating in some of these deliberations and so on. So to their credit, they agreed that the science says that SAR should be measured as such, as I defined, in the shape of a cube. So today's telephones do not observe that safety standard, none of them, by factors of 3 or 4 or more. And NFR, which is abbreviation for an agency, government agency in France, got so many telephones tested and none of them passed the standard. So they published the results. I used their results to also confirm that this is correct, and none of the cell phones will observe, is observing the safety standard. So that's where we are. And you asked me a question, what keeps me going? I'm a professor. I am used to and not being told what to publish. If I can publish it, I publish it. See, so unlike, I didn't have an industrial employer. I had an academic employer. So universities allow you to publish whatever you can get published. So I send in data, it gets published.
And why do you think that data has been so, why has it been ignored by the industry?
Because they cannot observe. Well, they give you two reasons. First of all, they say that, yeah, but most of the time, digital devices do not radiate as much power as the FCC requires us to test that. But my rebuttal to that is that if you're out in the boondocks where the base station is not nearby, then you're authorized to use a certain amount of power. And the telephone will radiate as you get further and further away from base stations. The telephone will radiate more and more power to maintain communication. So sure enough, if you are close to the base station, then you don't need to radiate so much power. But as you get further away, from the base station, then you're authorized to use a certain amount of power. And the telephone will keep raising the power by factors of two in order to maintain communication so that as a consumer, you do not lose communication. So that's the point. I mean, the device is capable of radiating more power. It doesn't need to use that much power if you are in proximity of a base station, because the base station can amplify it. So in other words, there is a signal that comes in that says, can you hear me, more or less? And the base station says, yeah, I can hear you. And so it reduces the power. But as you get further away from the base station, say you are in a car and you pass by a base station, the power is reduced. But as you get further away from the base station, base tower, the so-called tower, then the power is increased because you're further away and a consumer wants the communication to be maintained. So that's what happens. It's a digital device. Your cell phone is a digital device. It's a smart device. It will radiate only as much as is needed to maintain communication. And you get further and further away, or you are in the sparsely populated areas of a town with downtown, there are a lot of base stations in central cities, lots of base stations, more than one, actually, because there are a lot of consumers using the towers. But as you get further away from the central city, into the suburbs where the base stations are fewer and fewer, then the device is allowed to radiate more and more power to maintain communication. And
this is something that most people don't know, is that a weak signal requires far more radiation. And it's generally thought of that if you've got a weak signal that you're off grid, or that's a good thing. But a weak signal is a lot more dangerous, which is something most people don't know.
See, in other words, the purpose of the device is to maintain communication. And so otherwise the consumer would be very frustrated that it's dropping calls all the time. So a good telephone will not be dropping calls as long as it can maintain communication. Because to a consumer, that's the important aspect of a communication device.
Right. Now, the safe tech advocacy groups all across the globe, and, you know, all the appeals that have been written by scientists, your image that you are so well known for, which is the brain of a 5-year-old, a 10-year-old, and an adult's absorption of cell phone radiation, is probably the most referred to image, I think, in the safe tech space. So could you speak to us about that and what you uncovered whilst you were studying the different absorption rates of children versus adults?
I think the thing is that when a child is growing, the PNR, the outer ear, is fairly thin. And as you get to an adult stage, then it's fully grown. And so what happens then is that because of the thinner ear, the deposition goes much further into the brain for a child than it does for a 10-year-old and for an adult, human adult. For women, it will go further than it will for men, husky men. So it's just simple. For every millimeter removal from the brain, there is a 10 to 12 to 20% reduction. In fact, ANFR in France claims that on the basis of their testing, it reduces close to 20% for every millimeter distal placement of the telephone. So 20%, you know, it's a compounding rate.
Yeah.
1.2 See, 20% is one factor of 1.2. 1.2 to the power 5 is like 6 or 7 times. That's why their results say that you are violating the safety guideline by a factor of 5 or 6 times.
Yeah, well, their advertising of pictures is very much geared towards holding mobile phones in your hand or your pocket or very close to your body. So it's really unfortunate that the safety compliance section of mobile phones is actually telling you to keep it at least 5 millimeters away, just like they did with the spacer you talked about.
That's the reason.
Advertising is very different.
5 millimeters. But the point is, how do you hold it 5 millimeter away in a crowded area? Mm-hmm. I still hope to listen to it or talk on it.
Mm-hmm.
Because you try and hold a cell phone in your hand, your mobile. After all, that's the purpose of this cell phone, is it's a mobile phone.
Correct.
And you hold it fire. How do you
make it? They literally call it a handheld device.
Yeah. And also, how do you maintain that 5 millimeter? Mm-hmm. Try and do it in a moving situation.
Yeah.
How do you know it is 5 millimeter and not 3 millimeters and not 2 millimeters? Right? We're talking about millimeters now.
Yeah.
And that's how they try to get out of this thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the beauty of it is that they can make devices that either they should sell a spacer to maintain, you know, a cone type of thing that goes into your ear. From the speaker.
Doubt it. We're well past anything like that, I think, Professor. But nice try. But we will talk about solutions. We're going to get to that point. But just on that topic, I think for me personally, 2006 was a turning point, I think, when the industry, the telco industry, started to focus, and the big tech industry, on teenagers, right? Young adults, or I think they call them tweens, right? So between the middle childhood and adolescent years of 8 to 12 years old, and even children as young as 5 began to be targeted. And this was actually in an article that surprisingly was written in the New York Times, how they're targeting children. So I don't know if you've read that article, but even if you haven't, I had to gulp at the fact that children in that age bracket, we know, according to your research, are twice as much radiation is picked up by their brains than an adult. And my question is, how are they even getting away with selling this to children whose brains are not fully developed when we have enough research papers that prove there's biological harm and we have a dummy test that has no consideration whatsoever for the head size or even the biological functions of a child?
Yes, it's a free market. Mm. They can sell those devices.
Yeah.
So they do. And even though they may write, maintain a distance of 5 millimeters or don't let the children use it, but it's a free market. So they can sell those devices. They do sell.
Yeah. So they literally used a dummy test, which is a negligent test, to proliferate the market with devices that do not even pass a biological test, so that now we're looking at a society, an epidemic of addiction. I don't know if you would agree with that, but there's very few places you can go to and not see people on devices. They're almost disconnecting from the real world to be completely warped in this artificial vortex of a device. And we've all been guilty of it, but it's just so horrendous to think that it's come to this as a result of a negligent test.
Yeah, you know, actually, I mean, how do you, if they, you know, in the US, people are getting the tethered telephone removed these days. They say, I don't need that. My cell phone works from the Wi-Fi system at home. So people are saying, I don't need a tethered telephone into the telephone system, mm-hmm. because I will go through the towers. So their telephones are vanishing. The so-called tethered telephone, the one that is into from the wall, those telephones are vanishing now. People are saying, I don't need two types of telephones. Mm. My telephone will work through the tower. And
yeah.
So you can see. And if that's the only telephone you have, how do you ask an adult child or a 10-year-old that you cannot use that? He or she is the most likely user because they need to talk to their friends all the time. So how do you say you cannot use that telephone if that's the only telephone at home now? So that's where we are.
And it's unfortunate, but I guess we have to speak about the reality of and the seriousness of this issue. I would love to hear your opinion on what safety testing you've been a part of that I know you yourself are aware of that actually gets closer to safety. In other words, is it too late to create proper safety testing and help our children and future generations use technology in a safe way?
I think safety testing should be done. I also published a paper on that. You should, first of all, replace the plastic spacer with an ear-shaped depression into the model of the head. And then you should measure, you should fill it all up with the absorptive material and measure 1 gram SAR down to the proximity of the telephone held against this with an ear-shaped model. And if you have not seen that paper, I will send it to you. Those models have been validated much better than this original mistake that was made with the assuming that cartilage. That's where the mistake occurred, that the cartilage is non-absorptive, but real living cartilage has blood flow in it. So the tissue properties of a living cartilage, and live cartilage, is similar to that of the face. It is not a plastic.
So for everyone listening, Sam doesn't have skin. And that's our biggest organ and one of the most important, especially for sweat glands and conducting electricity, which...
Correct. Wet gland is the proper word, yes. Blood-perfused gland and tissues. They are not non-absorptive. Mm-hmm. They're absorptive, similar to the skin, similar to the rest of the body. So it must be represented correctly. And if you've not seen that paper, then I will send it to you.
I'll definitely be sharing that with my audience. Yes, I've seen your papers. But I would love to ask you, you told me a story before we started this interview about how you were sitting in a room with industry when this testing model was due to be, you know, unveiled. That's right, unveiled and approved. And it was such an interesting story you shared with me, and I'd love for you to be able to tell our audience what you experienced.
See, I used to faithfully attend all these meetings, which I triply was calling for. After all, I've been a over 50-year member of IEEE. I'm a life fellow of the IEEE. So I have good feelings about IEEE, but this meeting was dominated by industry representatives because they thought that since IEEE is calling for a safety standard, that they should represent their industry. And I think they were under the influence of Motorola. Motorola didn't want to be proven wrong that they were testing their devices with a defective head-shaped model. And I mentioned that, but I think it's the liability issues involved here, that they had been releasing products into the market, testing it wrongly. So the industry was talking me down. But you asked me, why don't I shut up? I said, I'm a professor. I am used to publishing whatever I can publish. nobody determines what I can publish. I mean, you've heard the famous example. See, we take our cue from early scientists, you know, who stood up to the winds of the society that don't approve their. I mean, it goes back to Archimedes and goes back to people who used to drop, people who used to question gravity from Leaning Tower of Pisa. Forget the name of that scientist. So we all take cues from great scientists of the past. And if you can publish it, nobody questions you. That's the academic, this is known as the academic freedom. That's why we work for universities. University doesn't even require any. They don't want to see what you want to publish. If you can publish it, publish.
Well, that begs the question, why have there been so many non-independent scientists that are publishing research, which in all fairness makes absolutely no sense, on this topic?
Well, anybody who has been able to test these devices independently has validated what we have been saying. I mean, the biggest test that was done by ANFR in France, Marc Carassi, his committee, they had, you know, the only reason they give results on about 12 is because to reduce the database. Otherwise, they have tests on 150 devices. And then none of them pass the standards. So the only reason they have produced a list of 12 is so as not to swamp the data. I mean, you know, but they claim that 150 devices were tested and none of them passed. And so that's where we are.
Well, one thing that you're quoted as saying, and I'd love for you to remind me where this kind of goes, I guess, that in that committee that sets the standards, the room that you were in, you said that there was a co-chair from Motorola, and then there was someone from the Navy, the military industrial establishment. So what role do you see the military industrial establishment having in safety of wireless devices?
Of course, you understand the history of the safety standards, so-called dosimetry-based safety standards, goes back to early 1970s. And it was instigated because the Navy first asked, it actually dates back to the end of World War II. At that point in time, Professor Herman Schwann of University of Pennsylvania in Philadelphia was a contractor with the Navy. And Navy was the only one interested in getting safety standards done. Because, see, you cannot get far away on a naval ship. All the radiators are there on the ship trying to communicate with over the horizon other ships. And so the radiation sources are all on naval ships. You cannot get far away from them. You are maybe a few. And particularly on upper decks of a naval ship, you know, where the radiations are within meters, essentially. So Navy had an abiding interest in getting safety standards done. Then I got into this field in 1972, 73. Then I published some early papers which said that you're assuming that half the radiation impinging on the human body is getting absorbed and half is getting re-radiated, reflected. I said, that's not true. When the dimensions of the body are about 0.4 lambda, 4/10 of a wavelength, that the body acts like a human antenna. Since I used to teach antenna classes, so this material was very familiar to me. And I said, under resonance condition, I called it the whole body resonance, that the human body will absorb, when the human body is 4/10 of a wavelength, it will absorb more than its physical cross-section. It will absorb 4 times the physical cross-section. And then if you are in the presence of a ground, it will absorb 8 times the physical cross-section. So at first, it looked like a strange result. Why four times? I mean, this is huge. But you see, then I had my students working with for PhD theses and all that. So we did all kinds of modeling. Using method of moment, and then we found out method of moment is too computer time intensive. You can only represent the human body by means of 180 cubes of the body. And this FDTD, which was a new technique, which I then adapted to this field, you could do 6 million cell representation of the human body from the top of the head to the bottom of the feet. So you could get internal absorption, internal electric and magnetic fields with a great precision. And fortunately, FDTD is not as computer resources intensive as is the method of moments. So I used an FDTD method, which is a new method being developed for radar purposes. Here in California, there was one, Yi, I think was the name, Yi algorithm they used to call it. I think it was Yi. So I adapted, that was being used for radar calculations. And I used it for human body calculation, near field exposure. And now suddenly I could determine internal E and H field, internal electric and magnetic fields, with a precision of 3 millimeters for the whole body, 3 millimeter by 3 millimeter. And if you don't want to bother about the lower part because of the cell phone, you could represent the human head with 1 millimeter resolution. So you could really get with high precision. And 1 gram then now, all of a sudden, could be represented by 120 cubes rather than less than one cell. So it opened up a whole field of high resolution dosimetry because of that development. So all of a sudden, then my students could show that part of the reason that the human body absorbs far and beyond human dimensions is because of the antenna effect. Because human body is a conducting body. So the fields far and above your head, much broader than the dimensions of the body, would prefer to go, much like a lightning rod is able to absorb and protect your rooftop, because it wants to go through the lightning rod in a lightning situation, and you can ground it to so your building doesn't get ruined. So it is the same sort of effect going on. So the human body acts like a conductor and absorbs far beyond its dimensions. And that's why at resonance, then the body looks like four times the physical cross-section, and under grounded condition, it looks like 8.4 times the physical cross-section. So because of that, the early framers of the standards then reduced the safety standard for far-field exposure by a factor of 10, which then later on became a factor of 50, because people said, yeah, but you cannot expose somebody working at a radio station to the same amount of power because he or she is getting paid for that job. And why are we exposing John Q. Public, just who happens to have their condo or their apartment close to a radio station? So first a factor of 10 reduction, then another factor of 5 for public exposure. So factor of 50. But this all only addresses far-field exposure. In other words, the transmitter is far from your body. But when it is close to the body, then such a cell phone held against the ear, then we had to show that FDTD will also work for those kinds of applications. And we did show that along the way.
Because if I'm not mistaken, this isn't approved. This is already an approved method for testing. You've got the SAM test, but you've also got FDTD that is approved testing. It's just not being used.
It's not being used because, again, you see, Motorola was giving this technology to one Dr. Kuster, who was selling a artificial intelligence so-called robot to test. So he had a head model with a plastic ear, and the robot could measure. And all I did was to replace the robot by means of 3D motors. The robot is unnecessarily a $100,000 device, and you can do the same thing with 3D motors and sample the. And my model does not use a plastic ear. It uses depression in the form of a pressed ear, and that's filled with the tissue simulant medium.
So let me get this right. They've got an AI device that can test what you've created, like, in other words, similar to what you've created. It's a $100,000 AI device.
They had created that with Motorola collaboration.
Wow.
Using a plastic ear.
fascinating.
I am not subject to these requirements.
Yeah.
My employer never required any examination of what I was writing. There is the answer.
Right. I'm finding this extremely fascinating. I spoke about transmitters and the body's bioelectrical fields, right? So from what I understand and what I've researched is that wireless radiation does interfere with DNA, your receiver and transmitters of information, right? Is there cause for concern that the more wireless radiation that they want to introduce through this 5G infrastructure, which we're about to speak into, which will enter our atmosphere in a way that's unprecedented with millimeter waves, will technology that bombards our body, will it have the potential to create human transmitters?
Yeah, you have. Did I ever send you a paper, set of slides that?
That's all right. Just talk into it.
This guy in. Ericsson, Sweden. His name will come to me. I'm just Tornevik.
Mm-hmm.
Tornevik, T-O-R-N-E-N-I-V-I-K, Tornevik. Tornevik has Krister tournament and in Sweden, Ericsson Sweden, Ericsson company. He has characterized the emissions from 5G towers. That's mind-boggling how much power 5G transmitters are radiating. Because 5G, the main purpose of 5G is fast data link. And they'll provide you a communication device that can serve an organization. Is hundreds of times data links. So because of rapid data transmission, 5G devices are radiating powers that you cannot stand close to. This is his characterization, Tonovic's characterization. And if you've not seen that paper, I'll try and send it to you. And so you cannot. So if that 5G base station, 5G tower is on your rooftop, you better turn it down before you go up there. It is that high. And you know, 5G antenna is a smaller antenna. We are beginning to see some of these in Salt Lake City, for example. It's mounted on a tower,
on a utility pole. Yeah, small cells.
Pole. It's no more than.
Yeah, a backpack size antenna.
About 30 centimeters, 30, 35 centimeters, because the frequency is higher. And so, you know, when you go up the pole for any repair, you should turn it down, turn down the power. Otherwise, you could cook yourself a little bit. It is nothing to sneer at. It is substantial power. And I think Tornovic, in all his honesty, does characterize it. He says, stay away from it 5-10 meters. Yeah, you cannot go on a rooftop.
No, they're intending, and they're already starting this here where we are in Australia. They're putting in these small cells, which are these backpack-sized 5G antennas, every 200 meters down urban streets on utility poles and bus shelters, literally outside kids' bedroom windows. And this proliferation is for the Internet of Things, so that all your things have microchips and antennas that this device can read, because it needs to be in close proximity to your home and your body to read, because it doesn't travel through dense material as well. So not very well, I should say. And what's so scary is that because we are bioresonant beings and we resonate with our environments, like we're literally going to be in an unprecedented amount of electrosmog that is going to interfere with our connection to nature. It's going to be a sub-reality of this techno world. And so if these are the frequencies that our DNA is picking up on, does it have the ability to change our perception of reality?
Yeah, I say that if you've not seen Tornovic's slides, they're very revealing. And I can arrange to send them to you, even though they're Tornovic. But it was presented. I mean, in other words, it's in the public domain. Okay, he presented this paper at a meeting, open meeting. So he's not hiding it. We all tap into that, Tornovic.
What is that? Can you give, I mean, before people see it, because now you've intrigued the audience, what is it that you saw on those slides?
That you should stay away from these towers, 5 to 8 millimeters, meters away. Otherwise, the emission levels, the radiation level is too high. And you would perceive heat as a minimum. You feel hot. That's what those slides show. I can get those for you. I have seen those. I have used them. They are available in the public domain.
Yeah, I might put it up for my audience to see once we finish this interview as well. I'll put it up as a slide. But what is the biggest risk, in your opinion, then, of this 5G infrastructure? So what is the biggest health risk, or a number of health risks, I guess?
Well, the 5G higher frequencies, I think the perception is mainly that, similar to that of infrared, so that you will feel hot. And what is the long-term effect? We do not know. You see, the thing is, when the standards were set, starting in 1973, and we went through iterations thereafter, I chaired a committee as late as 1992 to 1999, and during my chairmanship we reiterated the old standard, saying we modified it by reducing by a factor of five and things like that. One should not forget that there were very few long-term studies initially, and long-term studies, long-term exposure studies are very expensive, because then you need to maintain 300 plus exposed subjects. And in the US, we mostly used rats. Monkeys were very difficult to get. And the few monkeys we could get were being used for medical purposes, medical drugs research. And so very few long-term studies using rats, 300 rats to feed and use them for a lifetime, sacrifice them, look at their tissues, organ weights, so on and so forth. That's how those studies were conducted, for a 2-3 year study with 300 rats to feed every day, to clean the chambers, residential chambers, and so on, where the rats were living, one at a time or more than one at a time. So there were very few long-term studies. But since then, Henry Lai, who has been keeping track of that with this DNA research, he claims that there are many more studies now. And they've all shown a higher incidence of cancer compared to sham-exposed or unexposed animals. So this is new information that is not part of the standards. And so when I say that standards should be re-examined, it got started back in 1973, reiterated up to 99. But 92 standard is the one that I chair that is now used by FCC, Federal Communication Commission in the U.S. for safety testing, is the 92 standard, 1 gram SAR. But back then, there were no long-term studies. So we did what we did, having no vision for what long-term exposures mean. And so 92 standard, which I chaired, is the one being used by FCC, blessed by IEEE. I mean, our committee of experts, first of all, said, it's okay, let's reduce it by a factor of five because of public exposure, 24/7 exposure of people living close to these towers. And IEEE then approved it as an institution Institute of Electronics Engineers. So anyway, that's the standard, and that's the one FCC is using. It does not take any long-term exposures into account, which is now common.
And it definitely doesn't test the way in which we use our mobile phones, which we've explored, which is generally on the body. Now, many people are concerned that technology is taking on an anti-life agenda in the direction of AI and transhumanism. So it's like merging humans with technology. And I mean, transhumanism in simple terms is literally a way of thinking about the future relationship between humanity and technology. So I'd love to hear your thoughts and I guess your wisdom on how we become conscious co-creators of the kind of future that we want. Because if we're looking down the barrel of what's coming now with 5G, we need to give people a message of stepping in a direction that's going to create alternative pathways and that is going to make it possible for us to live in a society with safe technology. What in this realm of AI and transhumanism, I guess this entire agenda of what's at play at the moment, what are your thoughts and wisdom on this?
I think, first of all, to complete the story on the standards, I think government agencies should get involved, like Food and Drug Administration, FDA, and EPA, Environmental Protection Agency, should get involved and set the standards rather than the voluntary committees that used to set standards back in 92. After I stepped down in 99, then I passed on the baton to C.K. Cho, who was quickly hired by Motorola. He used to work for City of Hope Medical Center in California, not far from San Francisco. So I thought he's a good representative of working for medical establishment and he has knowledge in this area. As soon as he got appointed to be the next chair of the committee, he was hired by Motorola and ended up spending the last 7, 8, 10 years of his professional career working for Motorola. And so the standards thereafter then were dominated by industry. And so I think standards should be set by government agencies with no axe to grind. And the qualified government agencies are EPA, Protection Agency, FDA, Food Drug Administration. But they don't want to touch this area.
Oh, I wouldn't put it in their hands either, to be honest, Professor, because they haven't done their due diligence these last 25 years. So I don't believe that we're going to see a future where they're going to start. But you know what? I stand to be corrected, to be honest. I think there needs to be a
new... And part of the reason is they don't want to get involved is because we had a president, Reagan, who said, do not overregulate. And... if the industry is interested, let them set up an organization to advise them. So since then, government agencies are shy of getting involved. And because that president said, do not overregulate.
Interesting. That's exactly what's happened. I know we've got to close up the interview really soon, but I just have one or two questions left to ask you, Professor. And one of them was one of my favorite quotes, to be honest, by Dr. Martin Paul, who was a professor of biochemistry and medical science in Washington University. He said that putting in tens of millions of 5G antenna without a single biological test of safety has to be about the stupidest idea anyone has had in the history of the world. And I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
I agree with this. I mean, the 5G is being rolled out rapidly. And so it's incumbent on industry to make sure that they're letting out a safe device. Mm. Because these will become common. as I said, the tethered telephones are being eliminated. Ma Bell is no longer in business. AT&T is no longer in this business. I mean, these cell phones are being produced by different organizations than the old days. Motorola lost its telephone business. They don't make telephones anymore. These are now being made by Nokia and Ericsson and in Japan and in Samsung in Korea, Japan. I used to test for, forget the name now, of an industry that used to make cell phones in those days. So,
yeah. Well, I think it's been a great conversation because we've explored the SAM test, which is being used and what has allowed the market to be proliferated with unsafe wireless devices, let's say it as it is. And I'm very grateful to you for all the decades of work that you've done to appeal to the industry to take safety seriously for our children, for our societies, for our elderly, for our women who are not considered during safety testing. And more so, even the solutions that you've brought forward with FDTD as alternative means to measure for safety. So you have looked at the issue, you've reported endlessly and published endlessly on this topic, and you've also reported on possible solutions. And those are my favorite people to speak to, I have to say. And I'm very grateful to you that you choose to keep publishing your truth and your work. And despite many, many moments of opposition, I imagine you've had throughout your
career. That's okay. I'm a professor. My role models are these early scientists that were not dissuaded by societal concerns at that time. They published what they saw, the truth.
Yeah.
You know that. We go back a long ways. That's where so-called principle of academic freedom in the U.S. Comes from, is that if we if we thwart the publication of science, that the society will never know the truth. I've cut off that cloth. That's why I had an academic position and I never departed from there. So 5G is being rolled out unnecessarily without proper testing. That's a fact.
Yeah.
And you need any of the papers on 5G or the ANFR testing of 115 or 125 devices, thanks to Mark Karazi. Oh, yeah. Either Mark Karazi can provide that.
A lot of respect for Mark. He's great. He's PhoneGate for everyone listening. I'll put that link up as underneath this
interview. Yes. Mark, we can thank Mark Karazi for that. He persists.
Thank you to you for your persistence. And it's been an absolute honor to speak to you today. I'm sure we will do it again in the future. And I'm just cheering you on. Keep doing what you're doing. And if there's any ways that we can support, as we are not SAM, we will continue to do so. And thank you for everything, Professor.
Thank you very much. You have a nice day.
You too.
Thanks.
There you have it. Yes, technology does bring a sense of connection. But now you know there is another side behind the marketing curtain. So what can you do? Stay connected with us at wearenotsam.com. You can also find us on Instagram or Telegram at wearenotsam and subscribe to our channel. But most importantly, find your tribe and spread the word. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you on the next episode of The We Know Show. Whilst the We Know Show presenters endeavour to provide accurate and helpful information to their listeners, these podcasts cannot take into account individual circumstances and are not intended to be a substitute for health and medical advice. You should always seek the advice from a qualified health professional before acting on any of the information provided by any of the We Know Show podcasts.